Hi, welcome to Hometown to Hollywood. This episode's guest is stunt actor, rigger, and coordinator, Brandon Ballou. Brandon has done stunt work for many different projects, but he is best known for his work on The Ridiculous Six and San Andreas Quake. Brandon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bunny. It's really good to see you. You look fantastic.
It's so good to see you. You know, we met when you were like 16, I think, mm-hmm. and you were, as I recall, doing pretty much every single show at Bainbridge High School, and as if that wasn't enough, you were also doing pretty much every show at Bainbridge Performing Arts, which was our community theater. When did you discover that you loved to act and loved to do theater?
Honestly, I really fell in love with performing in general. When I first saw movies, I was raised on beautiful Bainbridge Island with two loving parents and an older brother and older sister, and for the most part, we didn't really watch any TV. It was mostly playing outside in the woods and, you know, kind of using your imagination. And yeah, I remember the first real big movie I saw, it was actually Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's a perfect for you.
Oh, it was perfect. It's perfect.
Like your movie.
Yeah, and I was enthralled. I loved the acting aspect. I loved the stunts. I loved everything about it. I just wanted to be. I wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that job doesn't really exist legally.
So,
yeah, I really wanted to perform and be and feel that rush like that. You know.
Well, you were also involved in cheer in high school, as I recall. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, actually, they took a bunch of us football players because they needed to compete in the co-ed thing for 1 year. And so they brought, and I could tumble a little bit, and so they kind of brought me and Dayton over and a couple of the football guys. And it actually would make a really good movie if we filmed that. But yeah, they brought us over for one little bit, and that was pretty fun. That was a lot of fun, actually.
File that away, movie ideas.
I know, right? Yeah, it's all yours.
I love that. Oh, yeah. We'll hand that off to somebody else. I do lots of different kinds of writing, but I do not write scripts, luckily. Well, so when did you know that you wanted to get into stunt work? Because that's, a lot of kids want to be actors. Mm. You know, that's not an uncommon thing to want to be, but there aren't a lot of kids who say, oh, I want to do stunt work. Like, that's a different deal, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, just doing performing arts and really what it came down to was what I felt in my heart was I love to make people laugh. I loved it. It was the ultimate gratitude, I think, is to make somebody laugh and, mm-hmm. and really bring a little joy to people's lives. And I think what I loved to do most was like, kind of like slapstick comedy and falling over stuff and falling down things and yeah, it was just so much fun. And it really kind of dawned on me when I was on tour with this traveling group. We did Jack and the Beanstalk with little kids throughout the United States.
That is so fun. I've done a fair amount, you know, way back in the day of performing mm-hmm. for children, like groups of children. It's the most fun thing.
Oh, it's the best. It was for Missoula Children's Theater.
Oh.
And they do a lot of good work around the world now. And they're based out of Montana, of course. And, yeah, it just was the best. We'd go to town on Monday. We would audition the kids, give them their parts, and immediately start training them. And then by Friday, we had a show. And we would put it on, and it was Jack and the Beanstalk. And, you know, everything from, like, four-year-old jumping beans to, teenage Jack and Jill going up the hill to fight the giant. You know, it was just a great, it was a great experience. But just working with the kids and keeping them focused took a lot of energy. And I noticed a lot of my my other coaches that were there, all the other acting coaches, they just didn't quite have the same desire and drive as I did to keep them focused, keep them laughing, keep them moving. They were more focused on the acting aspect, and so not all of them, of course. There's quite a few good people there, but for my own self, I felt like, yeah, I felt the slapstick.
Yeah, physical comedy.
The physical,
it's physical comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like comedy, but there's so many different kinds of comedy, and yet you have a real gift with physicality, and I've known you so long, I get to say that.
You do.
Which is really fun to get to say. I actually had this crazy realization this afternoon before you came over. Mm. I realized that Dove's very first production of any kind, you were in it.
Oh, yeah.
It was at the high school. It was before she went to community theater, and she was called in to be Little T. Moon in Once on This Island, and
you played
her father.
Yep.
And she was 8, and you were, what, 17 or 18?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, man, that was a crazy production. That was so much fun.
It was a great show.
I think that, yeah, that one really capped it off there. It was so much fun working with Mac on that, and Chloe did a great job. She crushed it.
She did. She actually did. That's when I started to go, oh, boy. Here we go. Here it goes. And then of course, it was straight into community theater after that.
Yeah.
Well, so did you have someone who inspired you when you started to think, you know, maybe this physical comedy thing is something I should run with, you know?
Yeah. It was interesting. I had a talk with my dad. He's my go-to for all kinds of advice and ultimate wisdom.
He's such a good guy.
He is so good. And I said, Dad, I really love to act. And the best thing I like to do is make people laugh. And he said, well, do what you love and the money will come.
Ah.
And so I kind of sat and thought about that. And going through school and stuff like that, I was always climbing buildings and doing flips and just causing ruckus. And the best outlet for that would definitely be to focus and train and harness my skills and be able to show the world that I have a great physicality to give. Mm-hmm. And the safest way to do that is stunts.
The safest way to do that is to train so you know what you're doing and don't get hurt.
Exactly. Exactly.
Plus, you can make a darn good living out of it.
Absolutely. Both of those things.
Well, so how did you get started doing stunts?
There's a secret stunt academy that's actually up in Seattle.
Is it really secret?
It is really secret. Nobody talks about it. It is the unspoken thing, but there's a training facility, and they have excellent instructors, and I went through there, and I met a whole bunch of extremely talented, very soul-searching people like myself, and it was like I was home. It was immediately like I found my people, and we trained our asses off for like a whole month. We were lit on fire. We were pushed off buildings. We got thrown through windows, thrown downstairs, hit by cars, hit people with cars, hit other cars with cars. I mean, it was crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah. I've never heard of such a school. I mean, I've heard of, like, people learning fight choreography, right?
Yeah.
You know, with swords and stuff
We did some of that, too. But, it was everything all at once in such a condensed environment. We probably trained, like, 14 hours a day, every single day. And it was awesome.
I was going to say, it sounds like heaven for the right kind of person.
Yeah. I felt like a superhero. I mean, it felt like this origin story of a superhero. And at the end of it, I made a whole family, a whole community that I could rely on to get into stunts. And that's really how I got started.
That's beautiful. Is that school still in existence?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I trained at it I went back and taught, specializing in rigging and safety and falls. I really had a knack for those things, and so I really wanted to make sure that people who went through there had the same or better training than I had.
So maybe after we finish the podcast, I can chase down the contact info for that school and we can put it in the show notes. Because I think, you know, anybody who's listening to this who gets excited and thinks, oh my gosh, that could be me. That's resonating for me. Mm-hmm. It would be neat to be able to give them that resource.
Absolutely.
All right. So everybody keep an eye on the show notes. We're going to find that and put that in there for you. I love that. So you found the Seattle school because you were in Seattle at the time, because we're from the Northwest?
It actually was a complete fluke. I happened to have gotten back from tour, and I was visiting my folks, and I went on the internet, and I barely looked, and this popped up, and I was a stone's throw from where I grew up, and it was meant to be. It was destiny.
That's so fortunate.
Yeah.
So, speaking of school, back to, like, your previous school, like, we met when you were in high school. Mm. What was school like for you? You're obviously a very physical guy. That is a true gift you've got. You're also a gifted performer, and I can say that. We've been in at least at least one show together.
At least.
At least. And yeah. I've seen you in a bunch of other shows. So what was school like for you?
Wow. I was a very energetic, sweet troublemaker.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, I give full merit to every single teacher that I had on Bainbridge Island, because not only were they gifted in reaching out and getting me to actually focus and learn what I need to learn to be a human being and an adult, but they were able to cope with my numerous amounts of antics. I was a class clown, I was an interruption, I was a distraction, but not in a malicious way or anything like that. I was so excited. I was excited to be there. People excite me. They give me some kind of energy, like I'm an overcharged battery or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they really helped me through that. And through my life, I've thought a lot about people who might be like me that are out there that might not have the same resources and be as fortunate as I was to have those teachers. And I give them full props for carrying on and making it.
Well, you know, we are all wired a lot of different ways, and we all have a really wide range of gifts. And it's nice when we have teachers who recognize that and will work with that, you know. Now, you were, you know, like I said, it's a pleasure to have known you as long as I have, and you were just a delight and clearly had a lot of energy in high school. But look at what you've done with it. It's so cool.
Mm.
Well, so aside from that school, which sounds like it was maybe one of the best in the country. It's got to be if it's doing all that kind of thing. I mean, how many stunt schools can there even be, do you know?
You know, I know of at least six throughout the United States, and they are all top-notch. To open up a school for stunts, you need a master coordinator. And not only a master coordinator, but one that is recognized and really revered in the stunt community. And yeah, every one of them is a well-known coordinator.
Well, that actually makes a lot of sense. So at this point in my life, I've seen my kid, I can't tell you how many times she's had stunt doubles. I mean, literally so many, I can't count. In her first movie, which was a snowboarding movie, okay, she had 7 stunt doubles.
Wow.
7. One of them was a guy. And they were all Olympic-level snowboarders.
Yeah.
And it was crazy, these people, what they could do and what they would do and what they needed to do to pull that off. And even, like, on the set of Liv and Maddie and on other things, like, so many stunt doubles. And sometimes it's like, you know, the safety. I mean, the reason a stunt actor's brought in is generally two different reasons. One is safety issues. You're worried about exposing your actor to potentially safety issues and then having them go down and then all the production goes down. That can't happen. But the other is skill sets. Like, the stunt actor has skill sets that the actor doesn't.
Absolutely.
And that is called for in the movie. And so it's usually a combination of those two things. And so I've seen a lot of stunt people come my way, and they're amazing.
Hmm.
And the safety thing is huge. Like, these things are, you do them wrong, people can get hurt. So you really have to know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was the greatest lesson, and the very first lesson that you learn in stunts is you're not there to show off. You're not there to be the center of attention. You're there specifically to make sure that you and nobody else is doing what you're supposed to be doing and making it safe.
Yeah. Making it safe and making it look good, which is not always an easy thing to pull off.
No, it's not. Yeah, I've had my fair share of scary moments when everything went right, let alone terrifying moments when things were about to go wrong. And yeah, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time to prevent some of those and to be working with the right stunt people to make sure that things went right.
Well, you know, stunt people, I think of some of the ones, like, so for example, on the Disney show Liv and Maddie, we had people come in who had basketball skills, who had gymnastics skills, or who had, like, you know, like there was a sequence it doesn't really bear going into, but where some serious, like, sort of high-tech tumbling skills were called for. And this woman who came in, she was exactly Dove's size, mm-hmm. and so she was able to, you know, look like her with clever editing and pull off this kind of crazy high-level tumbling. It wasn't really dangerous. It was just difficult. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's really dangerous. Like, what's some of the scariest thing you've encountered?
Plenty of things. Obviously, there is, like you said, there's specialists in our industry, and there's jacks of all trade that do a bunch of little things. And yeah, it's exactly what you said. I mean, say you get a gymnast to come in and double to do a tumbling pass. Well, not only do they have to do a tumbling pass, they have to look like the person they're tumbling. They have to move like them. And that requires putting on extra gear. It puts on pads. You put on whatever you need to require what's required for the stunt. And so you add all that into it, and you need even the next level. You can't just take a regular gymnast and have them do, you know, a round-off flip-flop back with a full twist. Well, if Chloe's wearing a mascot outfit, mm-hmm. now you have to be a mascot tumbler.
Yes.
You know, and not only a regular one, you have to be one that is her height, her size, you know, it's all these factors. And it takes a stunt person to be able to manipulate their body and demand that much athleticism from themselves.
Huge athleticism. And then on top of that, one who understands how to behave on a set, mm-hmm. one who understands how to, like, basically, the acting thing, they're not maybe necessarily technically acting. Some of them definitely are, mm-hmm. but that's like a very gray area there. Mm-hmm. And then they have to be all different shapes and sizes, as you say, because they mm-hmm. have to be able to match all these different actors mm-hmm. who come in every shape and size.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and that's just the doubling aspect.
Yeah.
Everybody, I get that question all the time. Who do you double? Who do you double? And honestly, there's not a lot of actors that are, you know, 6'1", 220 pounds. Like, just there is not that many. And if they are, they're usually doing a lot of their own stuff. Or right. they have their own guy.
If they're that size, yeah.
Yeah, usually, when I was first starting out, I played a bad guy most of the time. Like, 90% of the time. They were like, oh, yeah, let's have you stand by the door. You're going to get shot, and you're going to go through the window. And
which is really cute, because you're such a good guy.
Yeah. And so I'd be there scowling, and you get shot, and the wire pulls you, and you go through the window. You know, that's it. And that's your bit, and you go home. And it's a great bit.
So, it is a good bit. Breakaway glass is really fun.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So right, that makes sense. So you're not always going to be doubling. You're going to be sometimes the one who is on camera getting mm-hmm. shot, pulled through the window, whatever.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I would say probably 99% of stunts actually happen behind the camera, and that is making it safe. And that's really what I've kind of focused on for the past 5 years is actually being behind the camera, which is very controversial to the show-off that I used to be. It's now making it safe and spectacular.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
I like that, safe and spectacular. You should have that on your business card. Brandon Ballou, safe and spectacular. Well, so in addition to that amazing school you went to, what other training have you gone through? I remember at a point you were doing some parkour stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's in your arsenal?
Oh, wow. Over the past number of years, I've tried to pick up as much as possible. I mean, aside from the actual stunts, a rigorous training is required. A lot of weightlifting, a lot of body work, calisthenics, biomechanics, things like that. So parkour is an all-body biomechanic training that is fantastic. It's amazing. And it really just keeps you well-balanced and mobile. And it really doesn't pack on a lot of mass. Like, you get a lot of, like, people who assume that to be a stunt person, you need to be a bodybuilder. And that's just not the case. I mean, we just need to be able to move and be hard as a rock.
Right. So you don't get so hurt.
Exactly, yeah. I've implemented a lot of yoga and stretching and sports medicine into my regimen.
That's smart.
A lot of bumps and bruises and, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to stay limber, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. Fighting-wise, you kind of pick up what's popular. I mean, my background is American boxing, and gymnastics, and I kind of continued to develop that, and I picked up Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and a bit of Krav Maga, just to kind of stay with the times, and you know, what's really going on with film now is they're really trying to make it look as realistic as possible.
Yeah, I've seen some crazy fight scenes recently, like just jaw-dropping, and I've become a real appreciator mm-hmm. of fight choreography. It's like, man, that is such a crazy art.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. When it's done well, it's just so impressive.
It is so impressive. When you even, like, especially for us stunt guys, when we can sit there in the movies and just only focus on what's happening, as opposed to being like, oh, he missed that. Oh, now he dropped that. What was that reaction just now? Like, 3 head doubles? That's ridiculous. Like, you only got hit once. Come on. Sometimes we do that. We pick apart stuff. But, yeah, true, beautiful fight choreography is just, there's nothing better.
It's beautiful. It's basically, like, very high-level dance and athleticism
mm-hmm.
all together.
Absolutely.
It's really cool. It's very thrilling to see it well done.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of additional training do you need to be a stunt rigger or coordinator?
Well, I actually coordinated for the first time in January up in Toronto. We did a show for Nickelodeon, and it takes a lot to become a coordinator. And of course, it all depends on the requirements needed for the show you're doing. And thankfully, mine was a small one, so I could test the waters a bit. But yeah, as far as rigging, it's ultimate safety. I mean, when you are the one that's tying the knots and attaching the shackles and choosing what tools you use, what types of ropes you use, you know, it's, you are in charge of safety.
Yeah, and people's safety is on the line.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
So focusing on rigging, for my own self, I really wanted to make people fly. That was my main goal.
That's fun.
Get into it. I loved superheroes ever since I was a kid, and flying through the air seemed like the coolest thing ever. So that was what I first, my first drive to get into rigging was that. And my rigging instructor Ish up in Seattle, he really taught me everything that I know. Right off the bat, he really opened my eyes to the world of rigging, and I had no idea it was so vast. I thought it was one guy pulling one rope lifts one guy. Nope.
Mm-mm.
Nope. There's physics and weight distribution and all kinds of mechanical advantage going on there to lift that one guy and put him where you need him to go and not somewhere else.
Yeah, and safely and when you want it to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Science, man.
Science. And there's such a science to it. And it's just taken years and years and years and the drive to stay updated on it and continue to learn is the thing. There is no finish line. There's no period at the end of the sentence. It's just you continue to train and that's it. That's the life now.
I think there's a certain type of person, and I'm one of them,
mm.
who just can't imagine not always learning something. Like, mm. that's just like, what else would you want to do with your life, you know? But just be continually getting better at something or learning something or on that curve. And when that curve flattens, you know you need to change gears.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. We constantly have to learn. And it's funny, we'll get together sometimes at gyms and all of our little training facilities, and there'll be workshops constantly throughout the week. There'll be, you know, all these time slots filled with combat training of every variety, knots and rigging, maneuvers for car guys. Like they'll meet and they'll sit in the corner of a gym, and they'll all just, you know, they'll be wearing like sweats and like sweatshirts, and they'll be just going over diagrams and like going maneuvers and things like that, and then they'll just go out in the parking lot, and it's so much fun. It's just, it's amazing the community that you have at your disposal.
That's so cool. So you've got a real community here in LA.
Absolutely. It is probably one of the most competitive aspects of filmmaking, I think. I think that And that's just the type of person you have in there. And they're all athletes. In every variety you could imagine, they are athletes to the extreme. And so they're very competitive, but it is all in good fun. It's a jovial family aspect of competitive. And it's just so much fun. It's like playing with sea otters for the rest of your life. It's just like, nope, my shell. Nope, okay, it's on my tummy. It's mine.
That's so cool.
And that's for everything. It's training and tricks and who can do the most kicks and who can do the fastest kick and who can do the most turns before they kick and who can kick a water bottle off the top of a punching bag and then kick it again and then kick it again and keep it going. It's all, it just builds on itself and there's no end to it, and I would not have it any other way.
You have found right work, Brandon.
Yes.
Well, so do you need an agent to be a stunt person? Like, actors, pretty much, you can't get very far without an agent. You can get started for sure without an agent. You can get a little ways, but, you know, how do you get your work?
That is a fantastic question. It is absolutely the reverse world of how acting is its own world, where, you know, in acting you have agents and you go to as many auditions as you can, and you get out there and you meet, and you give away thousands of headshots, millions of headshots.
Seemingly.
Stunts is, it's quiet, it's a silent meeting here, a silent meeting there, and thousands, endless amounts of hours of training, where you train with your brothers and your sisters of the stunt world, and they get to know you, and you get to know them, and it's a silent dance that you play, and it's all done. It's just all done that way. I mean, you get to know people, and they get to know you, and then that's when a trust builds, and only once that trust is built are you going to get work.
So trust and reputation are literally everything.
Absolutely, yeah.
That makes sense. I actually find that that's the case for actors, too, after they get up to a decent level, because so much is riding on the bigger projects. Mm-hmm. Like, you would never hire somebody that you didn't really, really trust and who didn't have a really solid reputation. Because there's too much at stake. And in your case, there's extra at stake. There's actual, like, lives and safety at stake.
So absolutely,
it's like, it's a whole other layer of trust.
Yeah, it is a process. And there is no way to rush it. There's no quick solution to it. It's just how it is. Some guys are the most fascinating people, and they have amazing gifts, and it's like they don't want the limelight. They're not about that. They're not about being the loudest person in the room. They're martial artists, and they're sprinters, and they're pole vaulters, and you know, they're race car drivers, and you know, and you would never know. You look at them and you'd never know most
they're
of the time.
They're athletes, basically,
yep,
who have found a particular niche in the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. You mentioned sisters a minute ago.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah.
I think you know, it like so much of our language reflects the sort of built-in bias. You know, I've listed you as, you know, stuntman.
Mm.
Because that's the word in the language that we have. Like, you're a stuntman. Well, you are a stuntman. You're much more than that, of course.
Mm.
But we think of stunts, and we tend to think of guys. Mm. But the truth is, there's a ton of women out there making a living in stunts.
Absolutely. I would say, actually, that there are more women in stunts than there are men.
Oh, that's fascinating. Talk to me about that.
Well, if you think about it like this, there's much more call for stunt women than there are for men. There's... not to mention, let me just tell you right now, stunt women are extremely tougher than we are. They are so strong and then determined and amazing. I've learned some of my best stunt stuff from some of my stunt women that I know. They're tough as nails, and they're smart and determined, and no one will work as hard as they will. Want to get on their level real bad. It's pretty impressive.
Actually, you know, I'm going to interrupt you for a second and just share a memory. I hadn't thought about this for a long time, but the person who was in charge of all the stunt work on Cloud 9, which frankly was a very challenging film to film because of all the stunts that were on it, and just the crazy conditions. It was a really challenging movie in general. Was a woman, so the stunt coordinator was a woman, and she was in charge of everybody and everything. And she, like, the buck stopped where she was, and she was incredible. She was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. It is not one of those typical, you know, everyday jobs. These are warriors. They're all warriors, and there's no inequality there. It's the toughest gets the job, and they are very tough, and they will always do the job right, safely, and the best, for
sure. That's so cool. So all you girls out there, there's space for you in this world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it sounds like there's a lot of respect, too. Like, is that your experience? Like, I mean, I know you're that way, but is that kind of...
Well, let me kick you a scenario. So, it's a James Bond film, and there's a big gunfight that happens in a ballroom, right? Well, there's me. I'm wearing a tuxedo, and I'm with a girl, and both of us have to take a tumble down the staircase. Well, I'm wearing a tuxedo, so I can hide every pad imaginable besides a helmet inside that tuxedo, and I'm going to. I'm going to pad up like crazy, and I'm going to go down a marble staircase. And then the girl next to me is wearing this thin silk dress and high heels. You can't hide anything in that thing.
You cannot pad yourself up like a football player.
Nope, because you'll see it on camera. So we pad them as best we can with the best gel pads we can, but even so, she's going down a marble staircase wearing basically nothing, and I'm going down wearing football pads.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's a perfect analogy for how it is in stunts. We ask the most of them, and they always deliver.
Wow! This is neat. This is not a conversation I expected to have, but I'm really happy to be in it. So, what are some of the best things about being involved in stunts, and what are some of the worst things? Like, what's the most fabulous and fun, and what is just the roughest?
You know, there isn't really that much rough stuff besides just being on yourself. I guess the hardest thing that I've found in stunts is your own attitude with yourself, and training yourself is keeping a positive attitude has never been a problem for me, but keeping a focused attitude and getting yourself out of bed in the morning when you're covered in bruises and, you know, you've got a couple of, you know, lumps on your shin that weren't there before and, you know, and you're all broken and bruised and you just keep going and you get right back to training.
And your call time is 4 a.m.
Your call time is 4 a.m. and you went to bed 15 minutes ago.
Right.
You basically just changed. but it is rigorous and intense and painful, and I loved every single second of it. My entire career, I've loved every single second of it.
That makes me so happy. Mm.
And the best moments are when a stunt is done right, and it is so perfect that the room is quiet. Like, they've yelled cut, and the room is silent because that stunt went perfectly, and the car may still be on fire, and a couple of the set pieces fell off, but it went perfect. And you know it. You can feel the atmosphere in the room when the sound guy is still rolling and the camera guy is accidentally still rolling because they're watching what just happened. And they're amazed. They're just amazed. And that's the best feeling. That is. You feel like Batman. You feel like you just saved, you know, a whole family from the upper floor of a burning building. And you're Batman. You're Batman in this moment.
And you might actually be Batman.
You might actually be Batman. Funny story. I actually know Batman.
Get out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you that story sometime.
Okay, good. Well, maybe off the record. Mm. So, what has surprised you about your journey so far?
Well, I think the greatest shock for me was... realizing that the realization that stunts isn't at all about showing off and being crazy and it's about safety, and it's about exactly what I said. It's spectacular. safety and spectacular. It's that's the key right there, is making something that is impossible for anybody else and doing it the safest way possible. And that is what blows people away.
Oh, it does. I mean, it's what makes your heart stop.
Mm.
It's what makes us go to movies mm. and watch certain TV shows over and over again. It's that, like, that you want to feel those feelings, right? Mm. And that's, stunt work is integral to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think of all kinds of different moments that are just, you know, emblazoned in the collective consciousness. And, mm. and so many of them involve incredible stunt work.
Mm. Absolutely. But yeah, it was that realization. I really kind of had that moment where, you know, like the screeching tires was my feet inside my body. Like my heart. I really had to kind of rethink my approach about stunts, because I thought it was all like just a crazy hodgepodge of things, but it is such precise science, it would baffle you. That was probably the greatest realization, and it was a harsh realization, but because, you know, I've always been, my childlike wonder is ridiculous. It's through the roof for most people, and curbing that into the safety aspects of stunts was probably the hardest thing I had to do. But I'm so glad I did, because it's allowed me to be a part of this world of stunts, and it's kept people alive, it's kept people safe, and it's kept myself safe, and still allowed me to do such spectacular and wonderful stunts.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I want to list after this.
Mm.
So what do you think is important and not important for success, either in general or in your field of work? Your choice.
I think that probably the three most important things for success in any field, and what has worked for me, has been determination. The will to get up every single day and have that determination to continue forward, and to take criticism in and allow yourself to absorb what is good and what will push you forward and keep you moving, and to take what is unnecessary and hurtful and shrug it off and just continue forward. Always, always, always moving onward and upward. Determination. Ambition. Ambition is easily, maybe not even second to that, but definitely on the list. You must be ambitious. And not in a malicious way, but in an absolutely 110% positive way, you must be ambitious. Opportunity knocks once, and it only will knock that one time, and you will barely hear it. And it will happen when you least expect it, and you have to leap on it. And you leap on it with a good will and a smile on your face, and you seize it. You seize that moment right there. And definitely third would be have a good attitude. You must have a good attitude. Towards everyone you ever work with or ever meet, or ever help, or ever hinder, you must have a good attitude. It's essential. It's how you are remembered. It is how you make a first impression. It is how you make a lasting impression. And it is also how you treat yourself. It's how you treat yourself every single day. Be determined, be ambitious, and have a good attitude, for sure. And you will succeed.
I love that. I believe that completely with all of my heart, and that's I would say exactly the same thing. And it's interesting because everyone I ever talk to, regardless of what they do in the world, that's pretty much the wisdom, and it's the wisdom for a reason.
Mm.
It's because it works. So, coming from there, and I know that you are naturally a very positive person. You just are. It's in your bones. It's how you are. And so am I.
Yes.
So we recognize each other that way. Still in all, there are those days. Those days when it's 4 a.m. and you've had 15 minutes of sleep and there's bruises that are just still even just, like, raising and you can feel them.
Mm.
Or maybe they're, like, internal bruises and, you know, they're all kinds of different bruises to have. How do you stay positive and focused when things are tough? Because there are those days, no matter what.
Yes.
Even for people like you and me.
Absolutely. For me, it has always been people. It has always been people that give me such energy. And it's either their reactions or their lack of reactions or their overall energy. If it's low, then, you know, I feel it in my bones that something needs to be done to either lighten the mood or cheer people up or cheer people on or something like that. There's got to be good, positive vibes in the room. Otherwise, it's not worth being there.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you get a grasp of that for sure. I mean, it's common sense most of the time, but yeah, I mean, you got to have a good attitude. Otherwise, it's not worth it. You know?
So it sounds like you don't focus inward on yourself when things are rough. You focus outward, and that helps you stay positive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for...
No, I'm just sort of like just checking. Because I think a hole that a lot of people fall into
mm-hmm.
is when they get down for one reason or another, and it does happen to all of us, they stay down because they like go inward, and they stay mm-hmm. inward, and they sort of fall into this hole. So it's like I do myself find it helpful to, look outward mm-hmm. and... It just makes everything easier.
Absolutely. And, of course, there's a limit, too. I mean, there's obviously a limit. If you're having a rough day and you can't shake it, I mean, there is no cure for self-reliance. You need to have friends that will be there for you, that will help you.
Mm-hmm. People you love. I mean, that's a huge one, too.
That's huge.
Some kind of tribe, some kind of network, family, mm-hmm. good friends.
Yeah. I have been extremely fortunate with the people in my life. Always. There's always been... such a great community that I rely on constantly, and they may not even know it themselves, but they cheer me up and they cheer me on, and I try and dish it right back as best I can.
I love that. That's beautiful. So we landed in Hollywood near about the same time, but I think we were just ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
So you landed here. How was that? Like, what was that like?
Oh, man.
None of us are from here. We all have our own stories. Like, okay, we're from the Northwest. How was it for you?
Yeah. Oh, man. I was such an outsider. It was ridiculous. I think my cheery attitude might have actually scared people.
Oh, yeah.
They were probably shocked by that. I was a poor kid. I had moved down with the help of my girlfriend at the time, and we were just poor kids living in the middle of Koreatown, and it was, I mean, we spent every single penny we had every single month, always. Like, there was always zero left at the end of the month. And it was a struggle and a fight to stay afloat here. I mean, it was constant, and it was ever present. And for most people, I think that can be extremely daunting, and it was certainly for me. But it galvanized me. It really made me knuckle down, and it made me really tap into my own determination. I was working 6 jobs a week when we first were struggling to maintain rent, let alone food and gas, and I was doing everything. It was so funny. I think that that it was such a desperate situation that it was actually hilarious. I was dog sitting. I was working construction. I was washing cars. I was working at a bar. I was a gymnastics coach, and... I think I was a babysitter at one point too. I mean, it was all inclusive and terrible, and I was bad at some of it. It's so funny. I have great memories from that experience, but it was all worth it, and I would absolutely have done it all over again. Some things a little differently, but all of it again. It just, that was such a challenge, was trying to catch up. Everyone seemed in such a rush here, such a determined rush and they're, like you said before, the blinders were on and their heads were down, and I wanted to smile and meet people's eyes and shake hands, and that just wasn't done most of the places because they didn't have time for that, you know, and it took a second to realize that they weren't being discourteous. There was too much of us in this town and too much going on. And if you stopped to hold the door for every single person, you would be stuck at that door because there's a million, million, million people here.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So, learning how to be sweet and also self-reliant, it kind of taught me quite a bit, and I gained some inner calluses, but, I still emerged with a smile on my face, and just staying afloat was a definite challenge at first, and, not giving up was the cure for that.
I really love that you share that, because I think it's really important for people to hear those words and hear that truth. It's not easy. Mm. It's not easy for anybody, pretty much. And this is what you have to be willing to do in many cases to get what you want. Mm. You know, because it's not just handed to you.
No, it's not. No.
Is that true?
That's very true. Absolutely. It's not handed to you on a silver platter. And although there's a double-edged sword there, because no, they aren't going to give you the job just to give you the job, because they don't know you. But on the other end of that, they really, really, really want to give you the job.
Yes.
They need you.
Thank you for saying that. Everybody involved in casting of any sort, and casting to me is giving you a job.
Absolutely.
They want you to be the one. That's what they want.
They really are
on your team, mm-hmm. which is interesting, and it's kind of counterintuitive.
It is, yeah. They make it really, really hard for you to meet them so that they know that you want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they give you that short period of time, they want to know that you're worth that short period of time. And then you have to make that impression and show them how talented you really are, because you are talented. And you have to make that impression, and you have to leave that impression, and they will give you the job.
Mm-hmm.
They will have no other choice. You are the clear winner. You win. That's it. The job is yours. And if they don't, then they made a mistake, not you. And you have to try again to show them that you were the right person for that job and the next job.
I like this, Brandon.
Yeah.
Spoken like an athlete and a person in the industry.
I'm very determined.
Well, that's why you're doing so well.
Yeah.
So what have some challenges been for you, other than living in Koreatown on no money whatsoever at the beginning?
Oh, man. Challenges. Yeah. Adapting. Adapting was such a challenge. Because, like I said, I wanted to smile and shake people's hand and be entirely honest, overly honest, all the time. And, I had to develop a brand new system of introductions, meeting people, social cues. It's a different world down here. And the best thing you can do is maintain your good attitude and your manners and be polite, but at the same time, listen. Listen far more than you talk. And when you talk, make sure that your words are worth it.
That's brilliant advice. I actually have seen myself more times than I care to think about. People who are engaging in behaviors that make all kinds of sense where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the behaviors tend to be on the side of talking too much. And they're being friendly. You know, in their mind, they're being friendly. But what the other person here is experiencing is that you're making me crazy,
mm-hmm.
or like, I don't have time for this, because they're trying to focus on something that's like got a higher stake to it or something. And it takes a while to kind of make that adjustment for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And again, it took a second for me to realize that they weren't being discourteous. They weren't mm-hmm. they weren't trying to hurt my feelings or be mean or anything like that. There was just simply too much. I mean, you meet these casting directors, you meet these, DPs or assistant directors, that there are people relying on them to stay focused. And one of those people is themselves to stay focused. And it isn't necessarily a callous approach. It's just the facts. I mean, you got to know. You just have to know that going into it, that because there's so much going on with this person that you're engaging, the best thing that you can do is listen. And yes, they will tell you. They will tell you, one, what they want to hear, which could be nothing, or, you know, they could get something off of their chest. And even just being silent and listening, I've made the best impressions, I think, in this industry, was just listening to another person talk, the right person talk, and absorbing that, and being ambitious, and helping them out, or staying silent, giving them my business card, not giving them my business card, feeling it out, you know? But it all came down to just listening.
That's such good advice. It's good life advice in general. And it's also really, really good industry advice. My experience is that the higher up you go in this industry, but truthfully, practically at every level, just because it is so complex, there's a lot going on, as you say. There's just too much. And so people are needing to be focusing down and keeping the blinders on and only letting in what needs to be let in. Otherwise, it's overwhelming and it's impossible, and they do need to stay focused. Mm-hmm. So, and it's different. It's different here than in other places because of that.
It is. It is an entirely different world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant advice. Thank you. If you weren't a stuntman, what would you do?
It was one of my things.
Hey, Fern. Ooh. Fern's making her cameo.
She's doing great. Look at this gal. Fantastic. When I was a kid, even before I wanted to be Indiana Jones, I definitely wanted to be a hero. And I think what I would do now, if given the option, would be a firefighter. I would want to study very hard and become an EMT and follow that path. And I'd want to save lives. I'd want to be involved in helping people or saving lives would be my other goal. Because, having a good attitude, being positive, being determined, and wanting to help people, I mean, that would be another good avenue and probably a really good skill set to have would be to be a firefighter. Would just be, it'd be a good avenue.
I agree. It'd be really satisfying. Any advice for young people who want to get into stunt work?
Yeah. You're young now, and that is awesome. And along with that comes a great imagination, a great determination, and the ability to choose. And it can be overwhelming. The options you have before you can be overwhelming. And there's a lot of pressure on you right now to make a decision, stick to that decision. And that can be overwhelming. I remember how overwhelming it was. My advice would be to not worry about it. Be as carefree as you can and focus on learning as much as you can, because the more that you know, the more knowledge that you have, it will tell your heart where it wants to go. And like my father said to me a long time ago and many times since, do what you love and the money will come to you. That's the best advice. It's the best. Brilliant man. He's my go-to for all good advice. And that would be my advice right there. Just listen inward and don't rush it.
And if they know they want to do stunt work, where would you point them?
I would point them to any number of gyms.
Start at the gym, kids.
Yeah. Be healthy. Be healthy. Be active. Because as much as you learn in school and as much as you learn on your own, the body relies on the mind as much as the mind relies on the body. I think if Stephen Hawking could get out of his wheelchair, that man would be surfing, and he would be doing pull-ups, and he would be doing CrossFit and gymnastics and everything he could possibly get his hands on. And, I mean, the man is brilliant, and you are brilliant, and make the right choices. Just take care of yourself. Be healthy. Be active. You only get to live this one time, so make it worth it.
That's lovely advice. What are you working on right now?
Right now, I am back for
hours.
another 12 hours, I think, and then I have to fly to Las Vegas to do the finals for American Ninja Warrior.
American Ninja Warrior?
Yes.
Fun.
The stunt company I'm working with right now, ATS, they are the world's greatest stunt riggers for obstacles, for everything imaginable. I mean, I've traveled all over the world with these guys, and they're the best. They're the best. And what we're doing right now is American Ninja Warrior, the finals in Las Vegas, and it's going to be spectacular.
And safe.
And safe. Safe and spectacular.
So, finally, how can people find you, Brandon? I've got you on Instagram. Is that the best way?
Yeah, Instagram is fine. My email address, we can give that out too, I suppose.
Maybe not.
Okay. Instagram is great.
We'll just keep it to Instagram. So
let's do Instagram.
Your Instagram is not quite your name. It's Baloo the Bear.
That's right.
I love that. Can you spell that for us?
Yeah, it's my last name, B-E-L-I-E-U, the Bear.
Love it.
Yeah.
Brandon, thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. Or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to hollywoodparentsguide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.